think I'd like to try lights off, if it's okay. Is that okay?
Think that's testing, testing, testing. Right? I think everybody's here. We had about 36 people signed up, so I think that's almost everyone. Hi. It's okay. Forty-five. 45. Okay. So I'm Andriana, and I'm really happy to be here. It's nice to see everyone. I feel like this is the only time I'm really gonna see you for this long or something. And we won't, this will be the most, oh yeah, some people can't hear. Okay. This will be the most time that we have to talk, sort of, because I'll be talking to you, I guess. I don't usually start the class. I never sit up here, and definitely in a movement class, I usually just get right into the movement. But I think we have enough time where I could talk for a little bit, and then we'll move. And also, I'm maybe not everybody, but often I think the first few minutes of any class when you teach. You're secretly assessing whether or not you're going to teach what you prepared or whether you're going to switch to something else. So I'm buying time, feeling you out. Usually we have a little more space than this. It's a movement class, so this is kind of the maximum that I can do. And actually we're going to, in today's class, so everybody got a sheet in their binder about some guidelines they can take away from this class, but actually today is going to be kind of, because of the numbers, it's going to be a modified version of that. But tomorrow, I've heard, God willing, we're in the meadow if it's not wet. And so actually, some of what's on the sheet we're going to cover tomorrow at 9:30. And I apologize for that. Anyway, so she's not really here. So what is this class? Geshe Michael sent us an email some months ago, and he said, "I'm going to do an energy retreat this time." The Lam Rim retreat is actually an energy retreat, and here's the list of people who are going to be teaching. And this is what you're going to be teaching. And all the things kind of made sense, like, you know, okay, Anatole's going to do the food and whatever. It all kind of made sense. And at the time, the class was called Alignment Techniques for Energy. And then by the time he printed the sheet, he was calling it Moving and Staying with Energy, which I thought was very spacious of him, right? Because really, I could teach anything with that kind of title. But my background is in dance, and I was fortunate enough that right when I was coming into the Dharma in 1997, I also was, I took a leap to fulfill a lifelong dream to dance. And I wasn't a dancer, and I wasn't trained, and I wasn't athletic. I was a bookish person who, you know, you could take really wild journeys when you're a bookish person, but nobody knows. So I advocate that route as well. But it was a very preposterous idea that I had. But the idea turned into longing, and then the longing became like a desperation. And so I was introduced to several quite profound alignment techniques at that time, which gave me access to the practice of dance. And this beautiful thing happened where my Dharma teachers were teaching me about dance and alignment, and my dance and movement teachers were teaching the Dharma, okay, if you could buy that. So I think I'm going to start by saying what the class is not, because you can get, I think you can get some information that way. So the class I took before this one was the staff yoga class that Ellen taught. Does everybody know Ellen, by the way? Before I start my story, I just want to make sure. Does anyone not know Ellen? Okay. Ellen, turn around and just wave so everyone can see your exquisite countenance. Right, look how sweet she is. So I wasn't going to go to the staff yoga class. I did my Nagumas yoga, which I like. It's not that vigorous, but it's working. If you do it correctly, it's working in the chakra, right? Which is supposed to be, they're telling us it's more powerful to get inside the chakra and work there than to put your legs behind your head. Although for some people, you have to put your legs behind your head, but I'm all for this kind of yoga. So I did my Nagumas yoga, I was very happy. I was doing an intuitive communication with my partner, Anatole, about what we were gonna flow into next, right? So I'm intuitively sensing that we're flowing into the picnic lunch. And I'm a little late, but I'm gonna go to the meadow. And then he writes me a note, actually, no, there's a staff yoga class and Ellen's teaching, do you wanna go? And so at the last second, I decided, oh, that would be great, because Geshe-la always says, you have to do a really hard yoga on the day that you teach, okay? So whatever. I believe that. And so we came to the class, and I love Ellen. Ellen is like, so the yoga teachers here are so beautiful. I hope everyone has gone. We take yoga all over the world, and these teachers are not world famous, but they should be world famous. Anyway, so it's exciting to go to the staff yoga class, sort of. And we get in, and Ellen's there. Ellen is like, she's beautiful, and she's an amazing yogi and yoga teacher. And she's precise, and she has this incredible sweetness. I hope you all get a chance to talk with her. And underneath that, she's tough as nails, right? Like, and you have to, these are the teachers you have to watch out for, these kinds of girls, because they'll get you to do anything they want, okay? Right? Shell knows. And she said, and I can't imitate how she speaks because I don't have those sweet qualities, although I could cultivate them, right? Because everything is cultivatable, which is nice, it's comforting. And she says, Mira told me to teach the hardest yoga class that I've ever taught, okay? And I was going to be on the picnic lunch just before this. So for better or for worse, I'm the kind of person who is totally willing to get up and leave a yoga class. I rarely do this, I think, right? I don't know, as my witness. I don't know if I've ever done that, but I carry that willingness to do so in me. And I don't suggest it as a path. But anyway, sometimes it comes in handy, I suppose. Anything can have a good side, right? So I had that flicker, the flicker where it's not a full verbal thought yet, but yet it can contain many, many thoughts. So I thought, well, I'm just going to get up and leave. But anyway, she's so sweet, right? That I and so beautiful that, and that's why I've never left a really hard yoga class, because of my close association with someone in this room. I've taken the most advanced yoga classes in the world. I'm not an advanced yoga practitioner. But anyway, what I'm going to share today, I believe, has given me access to being able to happily and safely take those advanced yoga classes. But anyway, so I took the class, and then during the class, Ellen had to say things like, it's okay, everything is going to be okay. I promise, don't worry, everything's, was anybody there? Some people were there, right? Yeah, it's going to be okay. Okay, so this class is not gonna be like that at all. Okay. You might be getting that feeling already. And actually it wasn't the hardest yoga class, I'm just joking. It was a beautiful class, and I'm happy that I was there. This class is gonna be the exact opposite of that idea though. So this class is going to be gentle. I think it's going to be addressing a lot of the same things that a vigorous yoga practice will address. But it's sort of approaching the problem, if you want to call it a problem, from a different angle. So if you think of words or phrases like relaxing, and you may or may not buy into this right away, but relaxing into alignment, or letting go of a habitual pattern, redefining the way that we relate with effort, okay? So I'm not totally sure, but maybe it's a cultural thing or societal thing, or and I notice a lot of Dharma practitioners are very they're so brilliant, and sometimes they're very driven, or I only know a handful of people in this room, but they tend to be, sometimes they're really strong, brilliant, perfectionist driven kind of people. So the way in which I'm going to propose that the way in which you relate with effort, or the way that you were trained in effort, or what you think of as effort, the kind of effort that you would use in school, for those of us who put effort into school, and I know personally that some of you did not, because I know some people's stories, but the kind of effort they encouraged in school, or to have a successful career, I'm going to propose is not the kind of relationship with effort, or it's not the kind of effort that you need on a spiritual path, and then actually that kind of effort will make you crazy eventually, or sooner, you know, for some sooner than later. But I think there's also an idea that if something is gentle, that it's not precise, and that's, so we're going to be exploring how that's not true. So some of the things I will ask you to do, and I don't usually talk about it, the background, this much, but I don't know why I felt like it was important somehow. A lot of the things I will ask you to do, which is the case for everything you get asked to do here, is you have to bring all of your being into play in order to do it. So in some ways it's going to look easier than putting both your legs behind your head. But really, I'm going to need you to be totally engaged physically, mentally, emotionally, and I'm going to call it energetically, but on the level of the prana. And that might take, so let me add in imaginatively. So I'm also going to be asking you to use your imagination in ways that maybe you haven't used your imagination this way in a long time, or in ways that are, I don't want to say it's going to be frightening, because that's not a good selling point. I guess what I mean is, you know, maybe I'm going to ask you to imagine yourself or this world in ways that most people would think are a little naive or foolish, but because of basically, we're getting into the question of does how I move matter? I mean, maybe that's does how I sit matter? Does how I move matter? Does how I sit, could how I sit change the thoughts and emotions that I'm having? Could how I move my body, and God, I'm moving my body all day, like I'm trapped in this thing, right? For it's good, right? I mean, it's a vehicle. Could my everyday gestures plant the most powerful seeds for me? Okay, because I'm using the body and every level of who I am all day long, whether I like it or not, right? Like I'm breathing, which is good. I'm pouring tea, or I'm walking around. That's a lot of hours in the day that I'm using the body and all the levels of who I am. Could how I move my body help me to understand what I'm using here, what I'm trying to learn here or not? So if it's true, which I guess we're all entertaining to some degree or another, if it's true what Geshe Michael says about the pen, if it's true that my mind is like a video camera and it's planting seeds for what I'm going, and then growing to some crazy degree, and then coming, you know, like coming out as my experience. They say that, probably a lot of you have heard this, but they say that you're planting 65 seeds in the time it takes me to snap my fingers. So that's either, I mean, that's all sort of, that's a big ball of terror and empowerment, right, like all together. It's meant to be really empowering, because if that's the case, then I can do anything, you know. What did Geshe say once? If you have a key, if you find a key, should be the key to everything. So if what he says is true, then that's all the power in the world. And then so I don't know. I guess I was thinking about last night. I guess I was thinking about change and how difficult. I know people here who've been practicing for like 3 months or 5 years or 20 years, and I guess I was thinking about how hard it is to feel like we can really make a change in our lives. So if emptiness is true, then anything is possible. And the more we understand that, right, it's supposed to lay this firm foundation of why that's possible. But in the interim, you know, I think it's, we have some kind of, a primal, I would suggest that we all have a sort of a primal feeling that really, really radical change isn't possible. Even if we're quite cheerful and on this path, which is a path of enjoyment and radical positivity based on knowledge. But I think if we dig down, maybe that's not true for John Foley, I don't know, okay? Because he's, if you know him, I'm not sure if that's true for him, but I think for a lot of us, it's hard to imagine the kind of transformation that we're talking about if we want to get enlightened or change the world or save the world. Like, I can't imagine, like Geshe-la always says, I'll just be honest, Geshe-la always says, like, you could use these techniques, you know, to make $1 million. And so I consider it a deficit in my imagination that I actually can't imagine $1 million, or like that doesn't seem, that I have a limit on my imagination. So I'm like, well, that's not, you know, that not intellectually. If you ask me, I can give you the party line, and it's heartfelt, it's sincere. But digging deeper, it's very hard for me to imagine the kinds of transformations that we're really saying are possible here, and that these practices are designed to help us. And actually, in Buddhism, that's no problem. You can become something that you can't imagine. That's cool. That's one of the benefits, I guess. But I think it helps to, there's a whole yoga of the imagination and the role that our, so I think we have to, so I do think we have to think about it in an honest way. Like, do I think that level of radical change is possible? Like, could my wildest dreams come true? Because that's what they're saying is possible, and we're nodding. But I think it's good to think about, like, how it could work, and do I think it can work on vaster and vaster levels? And so I'm a big fan of the finding the secret door. I think all of Buddhism actually is the secret doorway. You know, like, rather than storming the castle gates, like, it's so easy, you just find, like, I'm really fond of finding, like, any kind of system that provides me a backdoor entrance into something, like, that you didn't know was there, right? And so again, I think, it's the way that we relate with effort. It's like, I have to, I think there's a feeling like I have to, it's in our language, right? Like, I'm gonna face my problems. I'm gonna talk through this. I'm gonna get through my trauma. I'm gonna get over my grief. I'm gonna, whatever, like, I'm gonna fight fire with fire. I'm gonna, you know, and those are techniques. Like, that's a valid technique, to fight fire with fire, or to like hit a clogged drain with a hammer, right? And yoga's kind of like that. Yoga was originally known as what is it? Drastic means desperate measures. Okay, like, you're on a spiritual path. You have a limited amount of time. It's kind of like forcing something, forcing an issue in a prepared body and mind, in a body and mind that are being prepared properly. But I'm really a fan of the secret doorway. I think emptiness is everything we're learning here. And going inside the chakras, this is all like the secret doorway. Like, I don't know this story very well, but the part of the, you know, like in the lion, is it the lion, the witch, and the wardrobe, they fall through the back of the closet to get into the secret? Yeah, and then they face a lot of challenges and they triumph and whatever, but I always remember them. So I'm really a big fan of any kind of technique that's like, you know, you think you have to break through the front door to make a change or to do something, and actually you just have to look, you might just fall, if you plant the right seeds right, you might just fall through the back of the closet. So if we're lucky, some of what we're doing today that you probably never heard of is called, it's based on something that I learned in my dance training, And when I was struggling with the idea of should I dance, I asked Geshe Michael before he went into three-year retreat, you know, I have this preposterous idea, you know, I don't have any dance training, I really want to dance, what should I do? Should I go, I had this idea maybe I could go back to school to dance. And he was like, oh yeah, absolutely, dance is the highest practice, you know, that you could do. Absolutely, you should go for it, like, you know, all your training, you know, in the tantric college, after you meditate and do all these things for 20 years, then you go and you paint and you dance and you do all kinds of things. And that's supposed to be, and yoga, and those practices are considered so powerful that they put you over the top into your enlightenment. And so I was exposed to something called, in case you want to look it up later, and I don't have a board to write it down on, but you can ask me. It's called Bartenia Fundamentals. And it's named after, and it was so tempting not to share this with you because, you know, we don't have much time, and actually we're not going to get to all the exercises because we don't have the space. But when Geshe-la asked me to teach this, I thought a lot about it because we have some of the best yoga teachers in the world teaching us yoga alignment. And this is a totally different approach that's totally compatible with what you learn in yoga. So I think it's BARTENIEFF, Fundamentals. And it's informed my whole life and every single thing that I do. It has given me access to yoga and dance. And I think, like Mercedes said in her class, it was one of those things where the seed ripened. And she said, okay, I did the work. I planted the seed. The book, the Kidney Flush book appeared, and now I have radiant health. Right? So very often, the karma needs a... It's always interesting to me when they say that. There's a period where the karma needs a medium. Like, if you plant the right seed, you'll make... The karma will make the doctor that cures you. But you have to have the doctor. You know, it makes both the doctor and the cure. If anyone here is a Laban, this is probably not going to be the case, but Irmgard Bartenieff was a disciple of Rudolf Laban. Okay? If anyone here has studied it or is a certified Laban, it's very rare, but I would love to talk to you because it's just awesome. So Rudolf Laban was, I never talk about this, I never talk about what I'm teaching, okay? So you're the first. He was, I have to look up his dates actually, but he was around the turn of the 20th century, and he was German, and he really believed in the healing power of movement, and he believed that anybody could dance. And that if people learned certain things about the ways in which they moved, that they could heal themselves from injury, sickness, emotional problems. And he got together hundreds of people, supposedly, and choreographed these dances based on his theories. And I've heard that there's a film, there's like one bad remaining film or something that I want to see. And it's like 100 people in, like, I don't know, the early 1900s in Germany, like doing, being led by him in this beautiful dance. And he observed a lot of people. He was really obsessed with this idea, and he observed people in factory assembly lines doing everyday movement, and just regular workers and people who were dancing. And then they say he observed Tai Chi masters, which I always wonder about, like if there was, you know, who was the Tai Chi master in Berlin in 1915. But I guess, you know, they got around. And he believed, this may sound familiar, he believed that the body was comprised of pathways of energy, and that these pathways actually moved through the body and out into the space infinitely. And that if you could learn to move along these pathways, that this would heal you, basically. And so And then he was more theoretical, and then he ended up choreographing all these dances, which I hope we could see. Maybe we can all see it together next time. And then he had a disciple named Irmgard Bartenev, who was a physical therapist and also a dancer and choreographer. And they worked together, so she took his ideas and she embodied them into a series of exercises. And she healed polio patients in New York. You could look her up. So her first application of this material, which we are going to get to, was in polio patients and in physical therapy. And then she also was a dancer and choreographer. And so a lot of people athletes have used this to recover from injury, and dancers use it, actors use it. A lot of it is about working on those five. Geshe talked about the five layers, right, of who we are. So interestingly enough, you know, I think Laban was feeling his inner body, and so much of his work is about making that experience, like the meditations that Geshe is having us do, where you go inside the chakra. The Laban Bartenev work is so much about making that inner world just as real as, you know, this wood piece, and about consciously being able to consciously move energy. So in the five-level theory, right, Tibetan Buddhism purports to have found the place where the body and the mind meet. So every time we want to work in that place. It's almost a shame you can describe the five levels in 5 to 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and it sounds so simple. If it's true that my body is connected to my breath, which we can observe, and if it's true that my breath is connected to the energy underlying that, and if it's true that the energy is linked, chained together to my thoughts and emotions, and that we can work, that those layers ripple both directions, going inward from the body, and then flowing outward from the seeds, right? Ultimately from the seeds. Then this is like a miracle. I don't know. I mean, to me, this is like a miracle. And so they encourage you in yoga, they say, God damn it, you don't have much time. Like, use the inner and outer methods together. Like, it's so powerful. Use your thoughts. How I think can change my body, how I sit, how I move, how I feel, the pain in my body. How I move can, and usually I talk about it in yoga, can change my emotions and can help me plant different seeds. And I can learn to consciously move the energy in my body where I want it, which means that I can change my thoughts instantly if I can do that, right? I can change my thoughts and emotions. I can change my physical health. So how much time do we have in a day to work on it? Like, I don't know. You can meditate. In a retreat, you can meditate quite a bit, but there's always a cap. So in daily life, they say if you're meditating an hour, you're getting 10 minutes of good meditation, maybe. Anyway. And then yoga, whatever, half, you know, 20 minutes or an hour, 2 hours. And then you have another 20 hours of the day. I guess what I would like you to consider is that through this gentle approach that we'll explore, that these levels are available to you all day long, that your practice is available to you all day long, That you can plant the most powerful seeds all day long by making your movement meaningful, by using the inner and the outer together. Yoga was designed to help people meditate. It's very useful. You should do it. I do it. I don't like it. I like the benefits of it, but you know, I'm not one of those people who just enjoys putting my legs behind my head. There are people. There's a lot of people who do like that. But what I'm saying is, let the taste of the experiences that you have in these practices grow out into your daily life. And what it feels like if you start to utilize these practices in your daily life and your everyday gestures. You know, sometimes you have everyone's had like a period in their life. Geshe-la talks about the upward spiral. Everyone has a period in their life. However, some more brief than others, where it just feels like everything is going nicely, like effortlessly. And it's a kind of effortless grace. And people start using phrases like, you just feel in the flow, or in the groove of something, or you know, serendipity or synchronicity. I mean, we would say karma, right? But people get into this space like, oh, you just were in the right place at the right time, and you met the right person, and then you fell in love with them, and they loved you, and you got married, and then you were offered a job, and someone gave you a house, and then you inherited $1 million from someone you didn't know, so you didn't have to really lose anyone. And then there's just this flow of like, and even sort of the losses or the things that don't work out are just sort of, you can see were just designed to propel you exactly. You know, so you're like, your pizza restaurant failed, but actually then you became a multi-billionaire doing something else. Or that feeling like when you're in love. I'm trying to just, when the body and mind are working this way, and which I'm saying you could do consciously, by using those five levels, which are, you're using anyway, you're planting the 65 seeds per second anyway, use everything, like use everything, use it all. I'm saying that, I'm proposing that the way you move this from one side of the table to the other can be a yoga for you, okay? And can be part of your yoga practice. Or the way that I scratch my head can help you see yourself make that transformation into an enlightened being if you're using all five levels as consciously as possible. So I feel compelled to tell you one last story, and then we're going to put, after I tell you this story, then we're going to put all our stuff away, and we're going to lay, some of this class is going to be, it's experimental because I don't know if we have room. Some of it is going to require you to sit on the floor with your legs extended. Some of it is going to, I'm going to ask you to lay on the floor, but like Dharmamitra says, there's a point in Dharmamitra's class where he always says, he works you to death in a loving way, and then he says, do whatever you want. So in this class, I would say if you don't feel comfortable laying on the floor, then you don't have to. But just, there'll be other ways that you can participate. But I am going to demand that you be totally present and imaginative and making that inner world come alive. I don't know why I want to tell this story, but I do. When I met Geshe Michael, I had already met him. And he would do it sort of a Northern California circuit, which he doesn't really do anymore. Although I'd like to talk him into doing it again. So he would go down to Land of Medicine Buddha and teach near Santa Cruz, and then cut over to Vajrapani. And then once in a while, he would give a public talk in San Francisco. And I had already met him. And I came to the talk with my boyfriend at the time, who's very nice and not Buddhist and totally supportive, but really into me being Buddhist, but totally not wanting to be Buddhist. He never came to anything, but he was there. And I was really trying to figure out who my heart teacher was, because there's this idea that there's one teacher in your life that will speak to you, speak to your heart. And people were saying, it's kind of like falling in love. And that used to really, that used to sort of piss me off at the time. But it turns out it's true. But at the time I was like, well, how could it be like falling in love, you know? And then they would say, oh, well, you know, okay, it's not exactly like falling in love, but that's the closest experience that we have. And you'll know. And so I had been studying with, I had met Kyabje Lama Zopa Rinpoche. My first teacher was Venerable Rabina Korten, for those of you who know. I've had the pleasure. Anybody? Some people. My first teacher, yeah. So I was doing this, and I didn't want to shut anyone out from being my heart teacher. So I was doing this very elaborate, weird visualization where I would sort of picture Lama Zopa Rinpoche and Geshe Michael Roach and then His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and then I would merge them visually into this conglomerate. And then, because I was so nervous about who it was going to be, and I was like, you know, if I'm not playing the right seeds, or you don't have to be like that. This was a long time ago. And then I would rotate, I would cycle through like who that image, that conglomerate image was going to look like, because I didn't, you know, I wanted to give like equal, anyway. So, I don't know why I'm telling this story, but I think it's somehow related. So then I came to the talk, and I'd already met Geshe-la, and I felt totally fine and totally normal, and I wasn't having any kind of heightened emotions whatsoever. I was happy, you know, in a general, sort of, you know, not like exuberant, but pretty happy. And then he came in the room. And I just started shaking uncontrollably, which has never happened before or since. And my boyfriend at the time, who was very nice, still very nice, you know, turned to me and was like, "Are you okay?" And and I didn't have any kind of, it wasn't like an emotional thing, but I was just vibrating, like, you know, when you're in yoga and you start shaking, but there wasn't any strain. I was just visibly, it was kind of embarrassing actually, because everyone else seemed fine, and I was like, oh, you know, like this. So anyway, I think, and then, you know, and then the rational mind kicked in, and, you know, I don't remember, but, you know, made up different reasons for that. So anyway, it's an overused phrase to say that that we have a kind of knowledge in the body. Like, I don't like to say that exactly, like your body, whatever. Your body knows, you know, like you hear that sometimes, and it but really actually does, because of all those levels, the five levels that we talked about. And that the rational mind is your friend. And the rational mind is a tool, and at some point in your practice, the rational mind has to just take a holiday, and the rational mind will get in the way of your progress. So I'm just going to put that out there. Anyway, okay, so put all your stuff away, and I'm going to turn this off, and we're going to see how it goes.